Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Attention, Savage listeners. This is Michael Savage. It's a special edition of the Savage Nation. I'm in live today. I cut my vacation short to talk about the Bhutto assassination. Obviously, this is of paramount importance to all of us. It is certainly bigger than any other story out there. And I had made a commitment to my audience that, you know, should something dramatic occur during the vacation, I would be there. And I've come back to be here for you. I want to thank you for being here for me. I especially want to thank the approximately 8,000 listeners of the Savage Nation who have donated to the Michael Savage Defense Fund. 8,000 of you have made a contribution thus far, and I want to thank you. But let's get on to the Bhutto assassination. My first thought today, December 27th, 2007, which I'm sure is a thought that crossed your mind, is could it lead to World War III? The first analog that came to my mind was that of the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand of Austria in 1914. Remember, it was the assassination, if you remember your high school, go back to your review books. Archduke Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary Empire is assassinated by a radical extremist Serb who was associated with Bosnian Muslims. In other words, they were revolutionaries. They were revolutionaries. It had nothing to do with religion at the time. And they kill Archduke Ferdinand. That sets off World War I. That was in 1914 when Gavril Prikip, a radical extremist, killed him. Now, what are the parallels between Austria-Hungary of that day and the world today? In that time, Austria-Hungary was a nation on the verge of non-existence. It was ruled by an 83-year-old relic of the of an emperor. It was torn apart like we are by suicidal multiculturalism, but to a far, far higher degree. As a result of this assassination, the Austria-Hungarian Empire declared war on Serbia, Russia declared war on Austria-Hungary, and the rest of Europe soon followed the path to World War I, unleashing 4 years of incessant death and destruction upon the face of the civilized world. Today we see former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto assassinated. Already we are witnessing the devolution of Pakistan into civil war. If the United States, India, the Islamo-fascist regimes of the Middle East should be drawn into an open conflict over the implosion of nuclear Pakistan, will it be the trigger for World War III? We'll examine that today on The Savage Nation. A liberal president of the United States once thought that the nations of the world could be made free with self-determination and democracy. Democracy! And so he sent American troops around the world to lift the yoke of oppression from those under the iron heel of tyranny. He meant well. But in the end, his vision was destroyed by his failure to understand that there are some who would rather hate than vote, that there are some who would rather kill than be free. His name was Woodrow Wilson, the man who led America into World War I. George W. Bush is Wilson's modern-day twin. Bush is an international globalist liberal. He fights to spread democracy throughout the Middle East, but does not understand that the Islamo-fascists do not want democracy. Bush thinks his enemy is a lack of free elections. But listen to me. If Pakistan had free elections, they would elect terrorists, possibly even Osama bin Laden, just as the Palestinians have elected terrorists to head up their nascent nation. Attention, liberals. Democracy is not the answer. The enemy there is something deep and something primitive found within the people themselves. Something which it may take another 1,000 years to breed out of them. When the liberals of the West first met the primitives of the East in World War I, the cost was 20 million lives. There were no nuclear weapons then. We must realize who we are fighting, forget about spreading democracy, and put the vice grip of our military might to work against the Islamo-fascists immediately. If we do not, next they may come for you. This is Michael Savage. I approve of this monologue. If you care to join in on the discussion, Bhutto assassination, could it lead to World War III? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I'm here for you. Cut the vacation short for you. This is the only topic I want to talk about right now. A little later on in the show, I'm going to have a very special guest who agreed to come on today, Pat Buchanan. And that is because Pat is a wonderful, let's say he's been around. Let's say he knows what he's talking about. It doesn't matter whether you agree with everything he says or not. What's important is, A, he knows what he's talking about, and B, he can express what he's talking about, and C, he's not afraid to express what he's talking about. Now, compare him with the mealy-mouthed double talk that we got today from Giuliani, Romney, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Huckabee, McCain, and all of the others. They said nothing. They read sound bites. They're not qualified to be a leader. They're nothing but corporate shills. Every last one of them said nothing. I was appalled. The biggest putz of the day, the biggest political idiot of the day in the current crop of politicos was none other than Ron Paul, saying that the U.S. should let the Pakistanis deal with the aftermath of the assassination of Bhutto. Hey, schmuck, they have nuclear weapons, moron. Ron Paul is disqualified from running an abortion clinic, as far as I'm concerned. Rudy Giuliani, I'm sorry to tell you, sure, I choose him over Hillary. Let me be clear about that. No question about it. But man, do I wish I had a different choice than that. The fact is, Giuliani embarrassed himself today. He went all over the map. And here's what people wanted to hear. Okay, I wake up. I'm on vacation. I click on the news. I see the assassination had just happened. It was early in the morning. And right away, I click on this channel, that channel. There's Giuliani. And what is he saying? Nothing. Fundamentally, bring them to justice. Fundamentally, democracy. Fundamentally, let's get to the bottom of who did it. What do you mean, let's get to the bottom of who did it? She's dead, for God's sakes. Now, on the other side, we have the weepy-eyed liberals who were saying that she was a saint. Benazir Bhutto, they've made into a saint. She was suddenly a poor little woman trying to bring democracy to Pakistan. Now, that is as far from the truth as you can get. She was not a sad little woman trying to bring democracy to Pakistan. She came from a ruling power elite. Her father had been hung, by the way, in the same area where she was killed. I don't know if you know that. She was married to a corrupt man. She's worth billions of dollars, apparently hidden all over the world. She saw Pakistan fundamentally as a fiefdom of her own, much as all of the people who run that country see it as such. The problem for us is that we do not have an Iranian type of Shah. What we need is a Shah in Iraq. The closest thing we have to the Shah is Mr. Musharraf, who is the West's best friend. If I have to hear one more moronic politician say that the solution is to get rid of Musharraf, I'll know that we're in much worse shape than even I feel we are in. The worst mistake we could make would be to try to push Musharraf out of there right now. He's the only thing holding the monsters together at all. 1-800-449-8255 phone number, michaelsavage.com website. Savage Live today to talk about Bhutto assassination. Cut vacation short. Here I am, Ferris, Hartford, Connecticut. You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
It's a pleasure, Dr. Savage. This proves that you are the genuine article. I was driving back from the post office tonight. I heard your theme music come on. I remembered your promise to come back from vacation, go on the airwaves if something of a cataclysmic nature or an important nature occurred. And I said to myself, what is this man made of? Okay, I know him to be a man who, when he says he's going to send me his three bestsellers, they show up in the P.O. box, dependably. This guy is a genuine article. The mark of a professional is consistency. By being predictable that you would come back on the airwaves, you have separated yourself from all the others. The others pale by comparison.
It's nice to hear. I don't want to knock them right now, Ferris. However, I will say I was quite stunned by the absence of major talent in talk radio. They've all stayed on vacation as though they don't know what's happening. The fact of the matter is I think they have an obligation to their audience who is clamoring. The audiences across America right now who are addicted to political talk, who are addicted to talk radio, even talk television, need leadership right now. We can't keep complaining about a lack of leadership in the political world if we're not willing to act as leaders in our own world, which is the world of the media, for God's sakes. Here's what an average person wants to know. What happened in Pakistan? Does it threaten me and my family? And what do you think America should do about it, Michael? That's what they want to know. Isn't that true, Ferris?
Yes, but you're the only one who can answer those questions, and that's why the others don't come on.
Well, do you think anybody would have immediately put a comparison to the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand of Austria in 1914 and what it might mean with regard to the assassination of Bhutto? I kind of doubt it. It's not that I'm smarter than them or better than them. I'm more committed than they are. But let's forget them again. Let's stick to the bigger picture, Ferris. The bigger picture is, how does this affect America? Is there any chance that these nuclear weapons could fall into the hands of the Pakistani military and then from there fall into the hands of Osama bin Laden's minions? What should America do right now? Ferris, thank you for that kind commentary. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. There are other topics, including, it's a small topic, but it's one worth talking about, which is the tiger killing in San Francisco and the shameful police chief whose hat fell off her head as she gave a little conversation today. She didn't know what she's talking about. I live in the sickest city in the United States of America. 8 years of so-called progressive leadership, and what do we have? We have a pathetic police chief who is an embarrassment to the uniform. We have a maniac for a mayor who doesn't know what he's talking about from 1 minute to the next. After 8 years of progressive politics in San Francisco, ruled by naked Marxists, we have homeless bums proliferated on the streets like a virus. We have a drug epidemic out of control. We have a homicide epidemic in San Francisco out of control, all swept under the table by the government media complex. The one rotten newspaper here is fundamentally a rag owned by the progressive, Democrat, radical, socialist, Communist Party USA. I'll be right back. Talking about the assassination of Bhutto, there are many things you do know about her, many things you probably don't. I can't expect people to know everything about every foreign politician. Look at, most of us don't even know the second name of our own president, let alone who she is. Now, she's been painted as a sort of saintly figure by the American liberal media. She's been turned into a sort of Florence Nightingale combination with Mother Teresa. She is the opposite of that. She is as corrupt as any of the men who have ever run the country. Her family was as corrupt and as brutal as any of them. She did not represent democracy. She represented just another branch of tyranny in Pakistan. Our best friend was and still is Musharraf. If you truly understand what can happen, should he be thrown out, as this moron Ron Paul called for today, you realize what danger we're in by letting these lightweights get up there and make statements like this. The real Pakistan is an out-of-control nation where half the population would vote for Osama bin Laden, at the very least, for the presidency. It's an Islamic, fascist, a hardcore state, and the only person keeping them under control, as I say, is Musharraf and the military. Now, I don't know who did this. Nobody knows who did this. There are, you know, stories that it was done by the Musharraf military himself. But ask yourself a question. The only question you should ask yourself today is this one. Can you analyze for yourself what benefit this would have been to Pervez Musharraf, the death of Bhutto? How would he benefit? There's no benefit to him. In fact, it undermines him because already half the world is calling for him to step down, blaming him for it. He's not stupid. He didn't get there by being stupid. So he understands things. He knows that it would have been I'm sure he wasn't a friend of hers. She was challenging him for power. But he understood that her death, particularly in this manner, would only weaken him, not strengthen him. So let's put aside Musharraf's involvement in the assassination of Bhutto for the moment. The most important question is the nuclear weapons of Pakistan. Make no mistake about it. Whose hands are they in? Who's guarding them? And who is going to guard them? The other lesson we've learned already, even though we don't have answers to who assassinated Bhutto, is that we have no leadership in the United States of America. absolutely none. Without any exception, we did not see one leader emerge today, did we? WOR New York City, Andrew, agree or disagree? Were any of the politicians leaders today?
Leaders, Michael, let me tell you, I am furious. I am absolutely furious. The last thing I wanted to hear out of any of their mouths, including the President of the United States and all these clowns in Iowa who are shaking hands in coffee shops, is how that we need to have condolence for the family. And let's first think about her. That is the last thing I want to hear. The first thing I want to hear is we need to define our enemy, damn it, once and for all. And if we don't, we are all doomed. You came on the radio today because you are the only great American, quote, unquote. You get these other clowns on these radio stations talking about how they're great Americans and how they're going to rest up and come back and defeat Hillary Clinton. Like, that's the most important thing to do. Every single one of them should have been on the radio today talking about what you're talking about. They don't understand the magnitude of this issue, and I am furious, Michael.
No, they don't understand the magnitude of the issue. To them, it's all a show. It's all about ratings and a show and a lecture and I'm a great American and you're a great American and slap me on the back and blah, blah, blah. They don't even understand half the things they're talking about, the danger we're in. Unless we understand the enemy. First, know thy enemy. Number one rule, know the enemy, the Islamo-fascist enemy. The number one enemy is the Islamo-fascist enemy. And there's not one politician, with rare exception, who will say this today. Even Bush wouldn't say it anymore. Do you know where Bush was last night? I was clicking around TV. And there he was sitting at a testimonial to the movie director, Marty Scorsese. You got Scorsese, you got Robert De Niro, you got Francis Coppola. They're very talented movie makers, but what do they all have in common? They have glorified the mafia. They have glorified murder. They have made fashionable the criminal. And there was Bush with Barbara Bush sitting up there upstairs. They're looking down. And I'm saying, how much further do you have to go to see the real Bushes here? Who have they been fooling these 6 years? Why are they courting, currying favor with Scorsese and the movie industry who they allegedly stand against? Did you see any of this, Andrew?
I absolutely did. Michael, it blows.
Why don't you ask some of your friends on the other station in New York what they think about their hero Bush sitting there licking Marty Scorsese's boots after pretending to be cultural conservatives? Ask them what they think about that when they get back from their vacation.
Savage.
The United States strongly condemns this cowardly act by murderous extremists who are trying to undermine Pakistan's democracy. Those who committed this crime must be brought to justice.
Oh, I can't take it anymore. You know, I think George Bush ought to step down for his weak leadership. He's not here for us when we need him. He just passed a budget that's the highest in history. He is bloated the federal government beyond anything that a liberal could ever dream of. But this is not about Bush. It's frightening that we have a man of such a low caliber in the White House right now. However, those waiting in the wings to enter the West Wing are worse. Now, we're going to begin with Ron Paul, who is, at this point, the biggest political idiot of the day. Listen to this moron in clip 27.
They have to sort it out. Countries should have the right of self-determination. When they have problems, they work it out. When they have violence, it's an utter tragedy. But for us to be supporting military dictators, I think, is tragic. And now there's a call to drop our support for Musharraf, on again, off again. We used to support Osama bin Laden, and we
quit. All right, turn him off. Turn him off. He thinks there's two children having a fight. It's like a Dr. Spock, let the kids fight it out. He has no idea what he's talking about. And yet he has millions of morons who think he's the greatest hope for this country. I think it's time for you to wake up that this puppet of someone, Ron Paul, is of no quality whatsoever. Now we go to Obama and listen to this stump speech from this corrupt ward politician from Chicago in clip 10.
I want to state how shocked and saddened we all are.
What do you mean you want to? Excuse me, you're shocked and saddened. Those are very original words, real leadership. Words we'll remember forever, Obama. You're really showing your capacity for leadership here. Now go on, now you'll see the rest of this humdrum speech.
I want to state how shocked and saddened we all are with the death of former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto. She was a respected and resilient advocate.
All right, you get the rest. We don't have to listen anymore. There's nothing there. You then go on to the biggest fraud of the election cycle, Governor Mike Huckabee, who is so dangerous, it's incomprehensible that any of you have fallen for him. Let me explain something. He's not going to win. He has no chance to win. What happened is the very religious Christians see hope in him because he is a religious Christian, and God bless him for that. That alone does not qualify him for the presidency, incidentally. George Bush also posed as an evangelical for the evangelical vote, and look what we got with George Bush. So let's not fall into the same sand trap again, folks. You evangelicals are the best people in America. You're the core of my audience, and I know that. And I have great respect for your love of God and your approach to God. But believe me, you're being manipulated by this Huckabee as far as I'm concerned. I want you to listen to, well, it's the same. There's nothing in there from Huckabee. Here. Well, actually, clip 13, you'll hear him repeating the liberal question, the line of liberal questioning in 13. Go ahead.
The first thing we need to do is just remember to express our sympathy to her family, and I think also to express our outrage for this horrible act of violence that has taken
the life.
Let's
stop right there. So far, there's nothing. So far, nothing. High school level. Now let's go on. Can you pick? Please pick it up.
Is just remember to express our sympathy.
All right, turn it off. Obviously, I'm having technical troubles today. I ask them to continue. They don't. They have to go back to the beginning. Like it's sort of like talking to a brain-dead person. All right? He says nothing, in other words. Our equipment isn't yet up to the standard of 1951 where you can stop a tape recorder and start it. We'll get up to that in a few more years. We'll invest in a better tape recorder. Now let's go on to John McCain. Here we go again, McCain, with his liberalism in 14.
I hope that we can see the unrest subside. I hope that we can see the commitment again of Musharraf for fair and free elections. And obviously,
right,
one
reading.
Of the keys.
What do you mean fair and free elections? What is wrong with you, John? Are you that much of a Manchurian candidate that you don't understand what you're saying here? You can't have fair and free elections in a nation where the people are living in the Middle Ages. They're not ready for it. They need a dictatorship. So McCain has, of course, never been qualified for this position. McCain couldn't run a Yugo dealership in Mongolia, as far as I'm concerned. I know he suffered in Vietnam. My heart breaks for him. I respect the man for his war service. That alone does not make him a candidate for the presidency. He used it for 20 years to become a senator in Arizona. And let me remind you of something else. It was McCain who joined Kennedy, who tried to slip one on us. He tried to pass the McCain-Kennedy Reform Act for illegal aliens. It was McCain and Kennedy, no one else. Now McCain is trying to reinvent himself as a real conservative in the Barry Goldwater mold? No, sir, not his politics. He is a stone-hearted left-winger, period. So I don't expect anything from McCain. I did expect something from the others. The others would include Rudolph Giuliani and Mitt Romney. I'm trying to say something positive here. Let's go down the list. Again, we have another huckster here, Hillary Clinton. Listen to her trying to wrap herself now in the cloak of feminism and friendship in five.
I have known Benazir Bhutto for a dozen years. And
let's stop right there. I know you can't continue from there. You'll have to replay it. Now, what do we care that you knew Bhutto for a dozen years? What does that have to do with anything? Did you share girl talk somewhere? Did you have a talk in the ladies room? What is this all about? You knew her for a dozen years. And what does that do for me? It tells us you're internationally, you have international acumen. Listen again. Go on now from there if we can.
I have known Benazir Bhutto for a dozen years. And I knew her as a leader. I knew her as someone who was willing to take risks to pursue democracy on behalf of the people of Pakistan.
Let's stop right there. She said nothing. She's trying to make you think she's her. Now listen to clip 7, the same rubbish, move towards democracy. Listen.
I hope that if there is any opportunity for the government and people of Pakistan to respond to this tragedy appropriately, it would be to move more steadfastly and determinedly toward democracy.
You know, this is we are really in trouble. We have nothing but frauds and dangerous frauds on the horizon. If Pakistan had free elections, they would elect terrorists, Hillary. If you don't know that, you're not qualified to be the wife of a philanderer. Now we have Mitt Romney. Let's hear clip four.
This points out again the extraordinary reality of global violent radical jihadism. And this type of loss of life points out again the need for our nation and other civilized nations of the West and of the Muslim world to come together to support moderate Islamic leaders, moderate Islamic people, to help them in their effort to reject the violent and the extreme.
That's the best statement of all. He's shown himself to understand that it's radical Islam we are facing, and that he used the word jihadism, he used the word Islam. None of the others would even say Islam or Muslim, to show you how capenized they have become by groups such as CARE and others who have now pruned their vocabulary to the extent that they can't even make sense of such an epic assassination as this. So the winner today is Mitt Romney. The biggest loser today, I would say, is Hillary Clinton. But the man who actually said and made the most sense is the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., John Bolton, who I always knew was a great man, smarter than all of them put together. I want you to listen to clip 21.
Well, I think in part the United States is responsible for this by pushing Musharraf to try and cut a deal with Benazir Bhutto, by encouraging her to go back in the country, by trying to act like we could have a democratic election campaign in a situation of great instability. And I think that should guide us now, this tragedy should guide us now as to what we do next, which I think ought to be declaring a timeout on internal politics. Let's restabilize. It probably will require a period of martial law, but let's keep our eyes on the prize.
Now, did you hear what he just said? He said it will probably require a period of martial law. That means he's a political realist. He understands what Pakistan is. He's willing to say what Pakistan is. You would have expected that from Hillary. She gave double talk. You would have expected it from the others. They gave you double talk. They're not qualified to be the leader of the free world. There will be no free world unless we get a leader. We're just going to have a meltdown, a further meltdown. And I'm warning you people right now that unless we get our military involved in suppressing Islamofascism to a much higher degree than it is currently involved in this endeavor, you will next be the target. It is only a matter of time until they come for you. I am promising you, looking back on history, that these people, this mindset has been around for a very long period of time. In fact, it's been around since the 7th century. That some large portions of the Islamic world have evolved past this insanity is true. They need our help now more than ever before. They cannot get it from good wishes for democracy. They can only get it through the good wishes of our military. Oh, let me take some of your calls and see what you have to say here on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, Mobile, Alabama. Farhan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Michael, thank you for coming back on the air. I was dying without you. And I want to tell you that I grew up when Bhutto was the prime minister of Pakistan. It was the worst time of that country. I mean, she was the biggest crook and the biggest fraud. And
right. But, you know, Farhan, am I the only commentator in America who knows the history of the Bhutto clan?
No, sir. Apparently, but you are on the talk radio. I mean, we see all clowns like Rush Limbaugh talking nothing. But anyhow, what I want to tell you is that...
No, I'm not here to knock the others, but don't they know the history? Are they not willing to invest any mental energy in studying who Bhutto really was? She came back she was steeped in corruption. You're a Pakistani, you know that.
Yes, sir, and I wish that they would have executed her the first time she left, and, you know, she was in self-exile because she knew that she had done all this fraud, and she transferred all the money from the country.
Right, and where was her gilded exile when they threw her out? It was in none other than Dubai. Am I correct about that?
Yes, sir, you are.
Right. Dubai, the very same good folks who wanted to take over our security at our ports, by the way, were from Dubai. But anyway, so she's thrown out of Pakistan after she's elected a leader of a Muslim country as the first woman at age 35. She is thrown out and exiled to Dubai with billions of dollars. She then tries a comeback tour. And how anybody could think that Musharraf would benefit by her death is beyond me. Do you agree with that analysis?
I don't think that Musharraf has anything to do with it. He did, like me, who did it. We didn't have no future. That's why we left that hellhole and came to the greatest country, which is the United States. But my point is, every time I turn on the TV, I hear the news that Osama bin Laden is believed to be somewhere between Pakistan and Afghanistan. This is what we have been hearing for 2 years now. So why is there no military action against that country? You know,
I don't know. Right. If they know where he is, why are they not sending the troops in there? What are they doing in Afghanistan?
They're doing there in Afghanistan, in Iraq, when bin Laden is in Pakistan. Why aren't you going there over there?
I don't have an answer to that other than I have my own suspicions as to why he is allowed to live, Farhan. And I believe it's because he is a convenient international boogeyman for the New World Order. In other words, we need somebody to be afraid of, you understand? Once he's gone, this entire trillion-dollar apparatus that's been established since 9/11 would have no meaning. So they keep him alive. It's like Arafat. I used to say, why is this man alive? Why don't the Israelis take care of him? He lives in their backyard. The answer is because the Israelis needed a convenient boogeyman to scare the Israelis into keeping the corrupt leadership in power. That's how I saw it then. I don't know if anyone believes that, but that's how I saw it. I'm a realist with this. I truthfully don't have any benefits from either side of the whole deal here, Farhan, one way or the other. But, you know, if you want to analyze it, why is the man not captured 5 years after 9/11? How 6 years, 7 years? How's that possible?
That's what the real question is, and that's why nobody comes on your show, because you'll ask them real questions, Michael. You know, and they can't give you the.
Well, sometimes real questions get you in real trouble. I understand that. So, Farhan, you came to America from Pakistan when?
I came in 2000. And actually,
before you leave us, would you enlighten the American listeners of the Savage Nation as to who her husband was when she was in power? Who was her husband?
Her husband was name was Asif Ali Zardari, who has been in jail for the past 20 some years for corruption charges because they've robbed the country's money, and for her to come on World Blitzer show and say, I want to see democracy want to do something for the poor people of the country. In fact, she made them poor. She robbed them and their money.
Right. It was Benazir Bhutto and her playboy husband, Asif Ali Zardari. In fact, the Swiss courts recently ruled against her, by the way, that she stole the money out of Pakistan. She's very much like an Aquino from the Philippines. You know, that type with 500 pairs of shoes. But let's put her aside. The Bhutto family, to be put in context, was just simply another corrupt power mad family in Pakistan. The last question I would raise for you, Farhan, because you are from Pakistan, is my analysis is our best friend right now is General Musharraf. Would you agree with that?
I agree to an extent that he's the one who can, you know, put like all the extremists on leash to some extent. But I don't think he's doing anything. When I was there, I mean, like 4 or 5 years ago, I went there for a visit. I didn't see any practical measures being taken out by him. Look at what's going on there. There are suicide bombers going off everywhere in the capital. That's the capital, like Islamabad and Rawalpindi.
So you're saying he's not a strong enough general. And in fact, we need an even more, we need a martial law in Pakistan, along the lines of what Ambassador Bolton suggested.
He's just as corrupt as the other ones, but, you know, that's the only option we got right now.
So
you know?
When Americans say we should have democracy there, don't they show you their naivete?
They can't have democracy because the 99% of the people over there have the mentality of the 7th century like you.
Oh, God. Farhan, you know, I hate to be correct, but believe me, I know I'm correct. And it's listeners like you who have made me happy that I came back today and cut my vacation short. And thank you very much for adding this dimension to the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And then you got the Tiger story here with the San Francisco City, the corrupt, incompetent, crazed city leadership here. They don't know what they're talking about. Police chief, the hat falls off her head. I mean, you talk about someone who needs a tiger in her tank? The police chief had the fung. The gate, the mall was 2 feet high. It was 4 feet high. It was 8 feet high. We thought it was 12 feet high. We don't know how high it was. A shoe was found. It wasn't found. There was blood on the wall. There was concrete on the tiger's foot. They stimulated the tiger. They didn't stimulate the tiger. It's crazy. Crazy. The whole thing's nuts. Then I shoot the poor tiger. The whole story is all of it's nuts. You can go crazy from it. Play the tiger sound. Poor thing. What's it doing in the zoo anyway? I don't know. The whole thing about zoos, you know, it makes you think. But in the wild, they can't survive anyway. They're killing him, the Bengal tiger. I don't know. Was it a Bengal or an... I think it was a Bengal tiger of all of it. There is a relationship in my mind. You see, if you follow the dots of my mind, it's not so crazy after all. We're talking about Pakistan. We're talking about the assassination and the zoo thing. And now the tiger was an Asian tiger, meaning a Bengali tiger. From Bengal, excuse me, a Bengal tiger, which is from the same region. But there's no direct connection between the two, obviously. I'm just kind of connecting dots in my own news story-ish mind here. What more can we say today that we haven't said? Let me summarize for you what has been said thus far, because the time is coming to an end in this hour. Could it lead to World War III? Well, yes, it could. What must be done? We'll talk about that in the next hour. I know one thing. Getting nice is not going to work. Getting tough is the only thing that has ever worked, particularly with radical extremists of this nature. I've also made a comparison to the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand in 1914, which triggered World War I. I made comparisons between that event and today's events. They're not direct comparisons, but there are comparisons to be made. And I'm giving you a homework assignment. See who copies this in the media, both television, radio, and in the written word. Who is going to be the first to steal my analysis of the connections between Ferdinand's assassination and the run-up to World War I? And what is going on today? You'll soon see that appearing, I'm sure. Thirdly, if Pakistan had free elections, they would elect terrorists just as the Palestinians did. I'll be right back. Be here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the special edition of the Savage Nation that I mentioned last hour. I've come back from vacation. I was planning truthfully on being off not only this week as well, but next week, because it's a very interesting time in the radio business. And most people are going to be off right through all of next week, incidentally. But I had made a commitment to the audience that should there be some kind of really important news, I would come back from vacation, which I did. I flew an hour or so from somewhere else, and here I am. And the fact of the matter is, I'm here for you as much as I need you to be there for me. Again, before I begin the discussion of the possibilities of this leading to World War III, the Bhutto assassination, what it means for us, what I think we must do, how it has changed the very nature of the election itself, who has fundamentally fallen off the scale of leadership, who possibly could now emerge as a strong leader. There's no question in my mind this has deeply affected the primaries and will affect the presidential election as it should have. I'm not saying it's a blessing in disguise, don't get me wrong. However, I think we pretty much have seen who is not qualified for this office, particularly in these times. We see that the biggest political idiot is Ron Paul, who says that we should just leave the country alone to sort it out itself. Stupid. Textbook libertarian idiocy. I have nothing against libertarianism. However, in a situation such as this, it's not two children having a fight in a schoolyard and say, let them fight it out. You know, one nuke could really destroy your day, and really you want global warming. Why don't you try 12,000 degrees over Denver? Because that's what you're liable to get. Speaking of Denver, Denver broke its record for the highest snowfall on Christmas Day. Everyone knows that except Al Gore and his minions of useful idiots. But we won't go into the global warming fantasy because it's quickly devolving. We will talk instead about the audience here for a moment. Again, I want to reiterate thank you to the over 7,000 of you who have sent a donation to the Michael Savage Defense Fund. And I want to, again, steer you to the MichaelSavage.com website where I gave you a special Christmas present, those of you who donated money, as well as those of you who did not donate money. My excellent attorney, Daniel, worked over the holidays for almost a week. He amended our lawsuit against the terrorist front group that is trying to drive me off the radio, and he added some very important information as to the conspiracy that this organization is allegedly involved in. And he has shown that I, Michael Savage, am only one of several Americans targeted by this group, and that I will not be the last unless these extremists are brought to justice right here in America. They are, by any means necessary, trying to convert this nation into a radical Islamic nation, according to my attorney and according to my own analysis. They try to intimidate me. They try to intimidate the passengers on the U.S. Airways Flight 300 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on November 20th, 2006, with egregious lawsuits. They receive overseas money, which is a violation of their nonprofit status. And by the way, as a side note, there is also another group in this country that will be dragged into this and uncovered for what they are. It will bring Hillary Clinton's campaign to the ground. Once the connections are seen between Media Matters and Hillary Clinton and the Stalinist techniques of Media Matters and the foreign money that is poured into Media Matters, you will see two things happen. You will see Hillary Clinton disconnect from this vile group called Media Matters. You will possibly see an indictment of the principles of Media Matters. Now, I didn't mean to get into this, but we pulled the tax records of Media Matters. As you well know, Media Matters is run by a crazy man who used to be a so-called conservative, discovered he was a homosexual. After he discovered he was homosexual or concurrent with it, he discovered he was a liberal. He created a group targeting conservatives in the media, including myself and others. Now, what they do is a form of a Soviet-style methodology is used by the ex-Soviet Union is what they're using. Hillary Clinton proudly said she helped create Media Matters. I would suggest that if you are a campaign manager for Hillary Clinton or you work somewhere high up in the food chain, you heartily recommend that Hillary Clinton disconnect from Media Matters rapidly, because what's about to come out in the courts may be of great embarrassment to her, and it will show that she is not as clever as she alleges to be. But let's go back to Media Matters. Are you aware of the fact that the head of it, the head honcho, David Brock, who poses as a man doing this simply to unmask conservatism and its mistakes in this country, earns over $240,000 a year in salary? Did you know that? All of you good progressives out there who hate the rich, how come you're so tolerant of David Brock's $240,000 salary as of the year 2005? We do not know what it is as of the years 2006 and 7. There are others who will be exposed when we publish their IRS form on MichaelSavage.com later on next week. And you judge for yourself whether this so-called progressive group, Media Matters, is really a friend of the truth or a self-serving organ of the Democrat National Committee. But let's get back to the bigger picture. This is all going to come in the next few weeks. We're going to show you with court records, tax records, investigations done by others, who these groups really are, and the connections between radical groups in this country, radical Islamic groups, and radical political groups in this country. Unless we stand up to these radical groups in this country, we will devolve into a mess of the type you see in some of the Islamo-fascist nations themselves. That's the whole point. It's not only about me, it's about you. And that's why I'm fighting them. And that's why I'm going to continue to fight them. And that's why all of the 7,000 or so of you who've sent a donation understand this and why I'm fighting for you as well in freedom of speech. These are not simply empty words for applause. Everything is at stake. Everything is at stake. And when you wake up on a day like today and you see that Bhutto is assassinated in Pakistan and you have morons, both conservatives, both Republicans and Democrats, calling for democracy in Pakistan, you realize how facile they are, how empty they are, that they truly are nothing but puppets or parrots. They're empty suits. They're very much like David Letterman and Leno, who could not speak or do a show for several weeks now because somebody did not write a script for them. They had to stay home, unshaven, and play with their motor cars. It's the same with the political dunces. Unless somebody writes a speech for them, they don't know what they're talking about. Yet they have their hands on the nuclear apparatus of this country. These schmucks don't know anything. Do you understand the danger we're in? How many different ways do I have to tell you? They're morons. They're no different than the entertainers on television. But it's no longer a laughing matter, is it? Things are spinning out of control in this world, and there are very few people on the horizon who can save this nation from a disaster. That's if we're not already over the edge of the disaster. Of the speeches I have heard today that were generated after the assassination of Bhutto, only one man stood out from all of the rest, and that was Mitt Romney. And he made a statement today that I thought showed he understood, he grasped completely what happened and what must be done. Listen to clip four.
This points out again the extraordinary reality of global violent radical jihadism. And this type of loss of life points out again the need for our nation and other civilized nations of the West and of the Muslim world to come together to support moderate Islamic leaders, moderate Islamic people, to help them in their effort to reject the violent and the extreme.
The biggest loser today is Hillary Clinton, who has tried to show that Iraq is behind us, there is no war on terror, that if she becomes president, she would negotiate with terrorists. She was completely out of her league. Listen to clip seven.
I hope that if there is any opportunity for the government and people of Pakistan to respond to this tragedy appropriately, it would be to move more steadfastly and determinedly toward democracy.
That means nothing. Empty skirt. Period. End of story. Empty skirt. End of story. She's finished. Phyllis, Sacramento, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, Michael. I share your rage. I appreciate you so much coming back from vacation to share these clips with us so that we can compare and contrast the candidates. You are the truth teller. You're my soulmate in rage. And I support you 100%. I love you, Michael.
Well, thank you for being there for me. Now, I want you to understand that the folks who were filling in for me, I thought were doing a very good job. And the best ofs I thought were good, and that would have been fine. But this is a very important situation right now. Pakistan could quickly spin out of control. The nuclear weapons could fall into the hands of the extremist elements within the military who know how to use them, Phyllis. Let's not forget that when we say nuclear weapons, we mean nuclear weapons. And when we say nuclear weapons in the hands of terrorists, it doesn't mean they're a bunch of madmen who don't know how to fire them. That's what we're talking about here. That's the important thing to remember. This is no longer an intellectual discussion where you can get a Hillary Clinton getting up there giving you the double crap, the double talk. Move steadfastly towards democracy. What does that mean? It means nothing. She's full of hot air. She, like her husband, is what is known since the time of Aristotle as a sophist. You have to look up what sophistry is and what a sophist is. Hillary Clinton is the classic sophist, from which the word sophisticate is derived. But don't confuse the two. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We were talking about Hillary Clinton and her sophistry during the break, before the break. And I'm going to read you a series of words, specious, captious, casuistic, oversubtle, no, abstruse, maybe, fallacious, yes, misleading, yes, paralogical, yes, unsound, yes, invalid, illogical, deceptive, illusory, elusive, plausible, Evasive, false, groundless, hollow, unscientific, untenable, fallible, unproved, inconsequential, irrational, incongruous, unreasonable, self-contradictory, inconsistent, unconnected, irrelevant, inapplicable, unwarranted, gratuitous. I think those words fairly well describe what we just heard from Hillary Clinton, but she's not alone, unfortunately. She's not alone in it. Obama was in the same category. Ron Paul showed himself to be totally off the wall, saying that we should leave them to sort it out themselves, drop our support for Musharraf. The guy is absolutely out of touch with reality. So we knew Ron Paul was just a jester, much as is Kucinich. They're the jesters of both parties. And I guess jesters have a useful role. But in a time like this, we don't have time for jesters. We need kings, not jesters. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Let us go around the country for your commentary. San Antonio, Texas. Donald, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, let me steadfastly get to my question. Do you think this could be the event, even though all the people there are corrupt, that could pull the moderate Muslim factions together in Pakistan, and they'll go after the radicals themselves? And, of course, we should be supporting Musharraf, but do you think this could be the event that will cause that to happen?
Well, you're talking about the middle class of Pakistan, of course, the doctors, the lawyers, the accountants, the teachers, the civil servants, who are no friends of radical Islam, obviously, because they would be treated very much the way the middle class was treated by in Cambodia, where they would probably all be killed or dismissed from their jobs at the very least. Can they be organized? And if so, who would be the head of that particular faction of Pakistan is a question for someone who's more knowledgeable than I am, Donald. I don't know the ins and outs of politics in Pakistan. I can't answer it. I do know that there is a need for more power right now and a firmer assertion of American power rather than reaching out and trying to understand the radicals. And unless we encourage our leaders to actually lead, we the people are going to be in worse shape than we are today. Las Vegas, Nevada, Abdul, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. First of all, I support the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom in the this beautiful country of United States of America that we live in. Hopefully,
God bless
everybody
you.
Support that. Second,
good for you.
What's going on in Pakistan is right now the leaders of Pakistan, from General Zia, General Musharraf, Bhutto, and the rest of them, they are tasting their own poison that they prepared for Afghanistan during the war, and they were trying to take over the country by sending Taliban, supporting the Al-Qaeda, supporting the extremists.
Hold on. You're making very good sense, Abdul, but most people don't know as much as you do, so I want to go a little slower. Very few people know that when Bhutto was prime minister, she was very actively pro-Taliban, and that was because she wanted Pakistan to gain more control over Afghanistan. That is correct. Is that you agree with that, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. Actually, they wanted to take over Afghanistan indirectly by sending Taliban and puppets and torturing those people and taking over the country. And actually, they did it for six and a half years. But right now, the karma and the God, which we all believe in, is getting into them, and they're paying for their actions. So
what you're saying is that in American vernacular, the chickens are coming home to roost, that all of the leadership of Pakistan, whether it was Musharraf or Bhutto or the opposition leader waiting in the wings right now, they're all fundamentally part of a ruling corrupt oligarchy.
Exactly. They're
oh, wait, all... but you're not arguing that the Taliban, excuse me, that the Al-Qaeda should take over Pakistan, are you?
Well, the Al-Qaeda and Taliban, I hope they don't, but the way everything goes, Pakistan is in a deep, deep trouble by supporting those so-called fundamentalists, which I didn't call them Muslims. I'm a Muslim. They are 100% doing everything against Islam. And so they, if they get the...
Well, I would say to you, Alaikum Salam, I hope that you understand that I'm a friend of Muslims, despite what the enemies of the truth want to say. I have supported the five principal religions of the earth from the day I began in radio. And I understand, by the way, that the moderate Muslim is more threatened by the radical Muslim than I am and most Americans are. And I thank you for your listenership from K-Dawn in Las Vegas. When I come back, Pat Buchanan to join us, and I want to see what he has to say about this mess.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're getting into the mood of the next interview with my favorite friend of the radio. And it's the holiday season. And of course, it's a terrible day. I mean, we're all very serious. But, you know, there's a tragedy and then there's life. Life goes on. Pat Buchanan, welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm sure you were shocked this morning, as we all were. How do you, as an isolationist, you are fundamentally an isolationist, Pat. What would you do if you were advising the president today?
Well, I'm less an isolationist than I'm an anti-interventionist. I don't think we ought to intervene unless U.S. vital interests are concerned or involved, and I don't think we should spend American lives unless our vital interests are concerned. I think what I would do today is, first, I think you've got to stand by Musharraf. He is the only power over there that's in power right now. He controls those nuclear weapons through the army. And the central concern should be U.S. vital national interests. They are to see to it that those nuclear weapons are controlled and kept out of the hands of radicals. Secondly, we do not want Pakistan breaking up or chaos there. And Musharraf, for better or worse, is the elected president now. Third, while we support the democratic elections, I wouldn't push those too hard for the reason that Mrs. Bhutto is dead. She was the most popular figure. Sharif is not running, or he's pulled out of the elections. And so what I would do is sit down and talk Turkey with Musharraf. I would send over my toughest guy, and I would say, sit down with him. Tell him, look, they tried to kill him twice at his, you know, Fort Benning, frankly. They killed her after attempting to kill her. These devils are over there in Waziristan, and we got to get serious. You're going to have to go all out and go after them, and we will help, and we will be there. But you got to realize that you're next on the list, and it is time to get...
Well, no, you're, in other words, what you're saying is we've got to back up Musharraf with a military adventure into the hill, into the mountains, where Osama and his minions are hiding, and wipe them out. Yet we haven't heard that from any... But, Pat, we haven't heard that from any of the candidates or politicians today. All we heard were homilies about democracy. It's ludicrous to hear this rhetoric, isn't it?
Well, this is ideological nonsense. We deal with the real world. What I would tell Musharraf, clearly, there's real hostility to the United States and Pakistan because they feel we jilted them after they helped us in the first Afghan war against the Russians. We turned to India. We dumped them. India blew off nuclear weapons. They blew them off, and we wouldn't send them the fighter aircraft we owed them. I would tell Musharraf this. Look, we know your problems of having any Americans come into the country, but if we got intelligence... And we know they're there, and we can move more quickly than you. We would like to mean you to have deniability, you to say we didn't go in there, we have no authorization, but we want to go in and do it if we have to, and we can kill this guy or kill Zawahiri. And we want to be able to do that, but you got to do it on the QT because they're proud people. And just like we wouldn't want folks coming into our country looking for assassins here, they're not going to like it, but I would work with him. Because look,
yeah, but Pat, you were around during Vietnam. You were sitting in the center of power during that time. Even a small military venture into Laos, look what it did with regard to the left wing in this country. We've got left wing fools in this country saying that we should promote democracy. They don't even understand the realities of Pakistan. Today, Ron Paul had the nerve to say that we should drop our support for Musharraf because he's a dictator. What are they thinking, Pat?
This is insane. Look, for heaven's sakes, the United States was allied with countless dictators in the Cold War, and people like Ronald Reagan would say, is he on our side in the big war? And Pinochet, Marcos, the South Korean generals, anyone who was supporting the United States in the war, you cut them some slack because that was a great cause upon which our survival depended. We would all prefer to have, you know, Democrats who are pro-American and pro-Western. That's not the choice we're offered in this world. And Musharraf is right now, he is the best bet. He is the only bet. You know, I was on, we ought to dump you, Musharraf. I said, who are you going to replace this man with? And they have no idea what we're playing.
No, you know, no, the liberals are absolutely empty when it comes to understanding the realities that they live in, whether it be the homeless bums in the street who they created or the radical Islamists who Jimmy Carter created. The fact of the matter is there's only one solution here, and that is a tough solution, Pat. But how come your advice, which was so crystal clear just now, which makes sense to me, makes sense to millions of people around the world, was not heard from today with George Bush? He said nothing as well. Bush said nothing, Pat. Never mind Ron Paul. Bush may as well have been Ron Paul's running mate.
Well, he's the president of the United States, and he should have said more. I mean, he should have laid it out for the American people. Because, listen, Michael, most Americans understand you're dealing with a country of 170 million, incredibly volatile, all manner of ethnic and differences and disagreements, religious discord, and left and right in there. And you're dealing with something like that, you've got to deal with the gravity of the situation, and the president should have, and he should have said, you know, President Musharraf is a friend of this country, he's gone on the line for us, quite frankly, sometimes he's backed away, sometimes he's been tough, but he's the only fellow we got there right now.
Pat, isn't it logical to you, when I said earlier, many people saying immediately, well, Musharraf did it because she was his enemy, that's nonsense, because no matter how I analyze this, can anybody come up with a benefit to Musharraf by her death? There's no. How does he benefit by her assassination?
He doesn't. They're rioting and they're blaming him, and Sharif is blaming him, saying he ought to resign. And he had worked with Mrs. Boudreau. We'd cut a deal between him and Mrs. Boudreau. He would run for president, give up his army post, turn it over to a pro-American. He would get four more years, whatever it is, in Pakistan for president. She would come in, win the election, be prime minister, and they would work together, and they would go after al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And it was a set deal. And then the Supreme Court came in and said, we think Mr. Musharraf's election is fishy. Because he is not qualified for it because of the Constitution and various things. So he fired the Supreme Court. She stuck with him. And then so he became enormously unpopular. The deal became unpopular, a corrupt bargain, which called him Sharif, came rolling back and said, you know, I'm the populist figure. I'm against these two corrupt dealers. And so she backed away from Musharraf. All these things are going on. Look, this is the game that's going on. And we have to look out as we look at it. Keep your American national vital interests in mind in what is going on there. Not whether we like dictators or dislike. Everybody knows that. But keep
but she herself was a populist, excuse me, an autocratic opportunist of her own. She was corrupt. The family was corrupt. Her playboy husband and her sequestered tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions, into Dubai when she was thrown out of Pakistan. And yet the American leftist media portrays Bhutto, God rest her soul, as some saint who was coming back to save Pakistan, which is more nonsense. It's Disney. It's right out of the Disney tunes. So at the end of the day, we have a corrupt nation loaded to the gills with nuclear weapons. And we have no leadership in this country telling us, like you just did, what needs to be done. But to me, it's a military problem here right now, not a political problem. So having said that, do we have the military capacity to aid Pakistan in a military venture against Osama bin Laden?
Oh, sure, we got the ability. What we do not have is the ability to control Pakistan. You got an army of 500,000 men and women. And you got a Marine Corps about 175,000. That is very small. We got commitments to fight for 60 countries around the world. We got two wars going on. Afghanistan is looking very problematic right now. And what we do have, however, is the ability of special forces to go in and strike and kill and get out. We are better than that than anybody in the world, and that's what we ought to deal with Musharraf on and tell him, look, we understand your problems with your sovereignty and all the rest, but if we see this guy, we want to be able to strike him with these drones, predators, or we want to be able to send our guys in and strike him and kill him because he's your enemy as well as ours, and the sooner we eradicate him, the better. The problem here, Michael, is the Taliban are becoming increasingly successful in southern Afghanistan.
Well, let's pause right there. The Taliban were originally supported by none other than Ms. Bhutto. You know that as well as I. She was the one who was a very active pro-Talibanist because she wanted to extend Pakistani control over Afghanistan. So in many ways, they are her child.
Certainly the child of the Pakistan intelligence services, because the Pakistanis, because they fear India most and they detest India most, they want a strategic base camp in Afghanistan. They had it with the Taliban. They were working with the Taliban. They were their guys, and the United States was working to a degree with the Taliban. We're going to put some pipeline across there. However, when the 9/11 occurred, Bush sent his boy over there, Armitage, over there to tell him, look, now you got to choose. It's us or the Taliban, because the Taliban won't give up these killers, and we're going to take them down. And Musharraf said, I'm going with the Americans. So he cut his ties to the Taliban, but that didn't cut the ties of the military and the intelligence services, especially a lot of these young guys who are really Islamist. They are very, very militant Islamists in the army and in the intelligence services. These are the guys that tried to kill Musharraf himself. His problem is, he realizes, look, they tried to kill him twice. His army's out there fighting the Taliban, and many of them are getting killed. And you got the Pashtuns in Afghanistan in great number, and they're very, very friendly with the Taliban because the Taliban come out of that tribe. So all of these problems. But the point is, we have to deal with it seriously instead of talking, you know, go and get your fourth grade civics book and say we ought to have democratic elections.
Yeah, unbelievable that we would hear Hillary Clinton and the others and Bush saying we need democracy, road to democracy. It's shocking to think that such emptiness can pass for rhetoric today. But what's interesting to me as well in this horrible murder today is that the murder occurred, Pat, in Rawalpindi, which happens to be the garrison where the Pakistani military elite resides. How did that happen if they were not involved themselves, do you think?
I don't know right now. The people said the security services were involved. Her security was. However, her security was blown up as well. So I don't know exactly who did this, but clearly we ought to find out, but that's a very valid point. As I said, the two assassination attempts on Musharraf took place when he was traveling through what is sort of the Fort Benning of Pakistan, where these
right.
young radicals in
right.
the military...
Rawalpindi is where she was killed. That is the most secure military city in all of Pakistan. It would be as though someone got killed in West Point during a motorcade. But you know, I watched CNN today, and they had some guy on who was crying and wrote a book with her that's coming out, and he was half promoting the book that's coming out and half crying for her. And they're all screaming, including some of the Democrats, that she wasn't given the protection that she had asked for, you know, scanners and this glass in the car that you couldn't see through. She popped her head out of the sunroof of the limo she was driving in just before the suicide bomber detonated the bomb, Pat. She herself exposed herself to them.
Yep. Well, look, I don't know the details of how this happened, but clearly, I mean, people talk about, when they say an inside job, I don't know who did this thing, but I sure would take a look at it. But the possibility that it could be rogue military, rogue intelligence, or people like that is certainly there. I mean, this whole place is extraordinarily volatile. And frankly, Michael, the hostility to the United States and Pakistan is as pandemic as in almost any nation on Earth. And it's because of the perception that we abandoned them and they were over there fighting Islamic radicals or were fighting Islam and all the rest of it. So, I mean, this situation is...
No, it's terrible, Pat. And, you know, at the beginning of the show, I compared the Bhutto assassination to the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand of Austria triggering World War I. We know the parallels are not direct, but certainly they're interesting to those who've studied even a modicum of history. You know, World War I occurred sort of by accident. An assassination leading to an action leading to reaction, leading to another action, leading to another reaction. We have a chain reaction called World War I, but there were no nuclear weapons, of course, in World War I. This is much more terrifying when you think about it. Would these young Turks in Pakistan, should they, let's say, wrest control of that nation, do you think they would use those nuclear weapons, Pat?
The Pakistani, if they took control of the country?
Yeah, let's take the worst-case scenario. The young Turks and the Pakistani intelligence, they knock out Musharraf, they take power, they have their finger on the nuclear buttons. What do they do next?
What I'd do is I'd talk to that top military guy and I'd say, go. take them out any way you have to take them out. Use your army. Do what you have to do to take them out. You do not let radicals or revolutionaries get control of nuclear weapons, especially those that hate the United States and despise us. Quite frankly, the Indians would be as apprehensive of that as we are.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask you. And again, that connects up to the World War I analogy. They're probably more terrified of that possibility than we should be. Then you've got the other players in the region. Let's not forget China. Let's not forget Iran. What about our good friend, the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad? What is he doing right now? And what did he possibly have to do with this assassination, if anything? Would he have been a friend of Bhutto or an enemy of Bhutto? Certainly an extremist like Ahmadinejad would not like a moderate like Bhutto. No matter how corrupt she was still a moderate who never would have fired a nuclear weapon at India or America. So did he have a hand in this? So there's many, many questions that need to be answered, Pat. And I appreciate you coming on the Savage Nation. I think the most interesting comment that you made, from my point of view, was the absolute disconnect from reality that liberals have when it comes to realpolitik. That's certainly something we wouldn't say about Pat Buchanan and Michael Savage, is it?
It is not. It is not, Michael.
Pat, what's your new book and when is it coming out?
Day of Reckoning. It's out. It made the New York Times list, I'm proud to say, and it's still fighting to get back on there, and it's doing very, very well. It's the Day of Reckoning, the series of crises that are coming down the road at the United States of America. It's a perfect storm, frankly, and one of them is the fact that we are in many ways overextended abroad. We don't have the military to do the vital necessities it has to do because we got too many commitments around the world, and of course it deals with the border crisis, the failure to assimilate folks who have come here, the falling dollar, the trade deficits that are running at 6% of your gross national product. All of these crises are coming down the road in the first term of the next president, and I think they're going to hit all at once.
Well, it's an interesting title, Day of Reckoning, and let's pray that today is not that day of reckoning. Pat Buchanan, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If there is any opportunity for the government and people of Pakistan to respond to this tragedy appropriately, it would be to move more steadfastly and determinedly toward democracy.
Rubbish, empty skirt, finished, finito, end of story. You're starting to see the veneer coming off the house of Clinton. You're starting to see the plaster come off the others, and you're seeing what's underneath it all. And we really have very few choices here. This event, this bombshell of an event, the assassination of Ms. Bhutto today, has changed not only the primaries, which are irrelevant, by the way, but the election itself. Hillary was building her campaign based upon we don't need security, we don't need military, you know, it's over, Iraq is not an issue, it's the economy, Medicare, Medicaid, the environment, and that other soft stuff that the Democrats specialize in. Today, it has all changed. Suddenly, it's 9/11 all over again. It may not be 9/11 here in America, but it's 9/11 in Pakistan. And those of us with a brain understand that in this world that we live in today, a nuclear weapon in the hands of an Islamist in Pakistan is just as dangerous as a dirty bomb in the hands of a terrorist here in the United States of America. We need a tough man to save America. We need a tough, plain-speaking man to take the reins of this great nation out of the hands of the internationalists. The corruption and the greed has got to go, or we're all going to go up in smoke, and we all know that. And I'm going to tell you again, that I came back from vacation because I knew the monumental importance of the Bhutto assassination, not only to myself, but to you, the listener. I knew that you needed a place to vent. I listened to other shows, and you know, it was very hard to find anyone really comprehending what was really going on and what was at stake. We heard the same rubbish. You know, let democracy reign. They don't know what they're talking about. To the 8,000 listeners who have donated to the Michael Savage Defense Fund on michaelsavage.com, I say God bless you and thank you. To my Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu listeners, God bless all of you, and may peace reign on earth with God's will.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I don't know where you're going to turn when and if something terrible happens. Are you going to wake up and say George Bush caused all of this? Is that the liberal response? If, God forbid, something horrible happens in this country, something worse than 9/11, you're going to blame the Republicans, Bush, heterosexuals, white people, Christianity, Jews? Who are you going to blame? Well, you'll blame anybody but yourself. The American left doesn't even understand that it is the reason. It is the chief reason that Islam is at war with the West. And what's really amazing to me is that the people who have the most at stake in the battle against Islamism and the most to lose if Islamism wins, you, the progressives, so-called, you're the least able to fight it, the least willing to fight it. You're the ones who hate the Pentagon. You're the ones who hate the White House. You're the ones who hate the state capitol, the national capitol. You're the ones who hate Israel. And yet the F-16s that fly overhead are there to protect you from the Islamists who would cut your throat and throw you down a well. The very values of the West, 40 years of civil rights, gay rights, feminism, reproductive choice, that's abortion, sexual madness called freedom, the right not to worship if you don't want to worship. In other words, the Marxist left's wild dream is protected by the very elements that you hate in this country. You, the sexually unorthodox. You, the bohemian. You, the poet. You, the professor. You are protected by those F-16s. You are protected by the boys who go to church and went to church every Sunday. You are protected by the rock rib conservatives in this country who fly over your head, who are dying in Iraq for your sins. Civil rights, gay rights, privacy rights, abortion, sexual madness, the right to worship or not to worship. All protected by the boys from somewhere else who you spit at, who you sneer at, who you mock. They're the reason you're alive. And the reason they're dying is because of your sins. The verminous left, the Larry Flint left, as now adopted by the Democrat Party itself, the Larry Flint left is now the official party platform of the Democrat Party. I'm not fooling you. Everything that Larry Flint and his ilk stood for in the 60s and 70s has been adopted, if not overtly, then covertly, by the Democrat Party. They have accepted this debased, destroyed West, social West. They not only have accepted it as the norm, they welcome it. It's the Marxist dream, the death of the family, the death of heterosexuality. Everything that the left dreamed of has come to pass in this country. Hit hardest the black people. 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. The American left celebrate this. Celebrate this as a sign of liberation, that they have been liberated from the binds of bourgeois marriage. The Muslims saying, hell no, we won't go. You're not going to pollute our children. You're not going to turn our children into Jezebels. You're not going to turn our daughters into whores and our sons into homosexuals. We're not going to let you do it. We'll kill you before you do it. You're not turning our sons into little homosexuals. You're not going to brainwash our children We will send them to Muslim schools. You're not going to turn our daughters into whores. We'll send them to Muslim schools. We're not going to let our daughters dress like Britney Spears. We're not going to let them behave like Paris Hilton. We don't like them. We think they're vermin. We think they're garbage. We don't care that they're held up as role models. We detest them. We hate them. We think that they're the most disgusting human beings on the planet. We'll not send our children. We won't even go to the movies. We won't turn on a television set. Incidentally, the Orthodox Jews have the very same view. So the American left, which is able to get away with these behaviors and sell these behaviors, is protected by the very, let us say, Christian right that they detest and sneer at in their F-16s, in their tanks, and behind their machine guns, if you wanted to put it in that crude sense. And, of course, they continue to not recognize that they have brought about Islam's rage. No, it's not Israel, per se, that the Muslims really care about. It's not territory. It's not land. That's what the left will tell you, that the Jews stole the land of the Muslims. That's the simple, archaic notion of the American left. It's that Israel's left-wing social premise and left-wing social freedoms that threaten Islam in the Middle East. They don't want it spreading. They don't want a homosexual parade down the streets of Damascus. They don't want a gay rights parade in Tehran. They don't want boys tongue-kissing each other in their nation's capitals. They'd rather die than let that happen. So they say death to Israel. They don't really know what Israel is. Israel's an idea. It's not that their grandfather's olive grove was taken. It's that their grandfather's purity was stolen by the infection of the West's social mores. And they don't want them in their villages. They don't want them in their homes. They don't want them on Al Jazeera. And they're not going to let you do it to them. No matter what the madmen who run these media empires may think, Islam will never tolerate the sewer pipe that comes out of New York City and the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood's sewer factories will never penetrate the Muslim world, nor should they. But that's what's provoking Muslim rage. It's not so much what the Pope said. It's what Larry Flint did by hijacking the Supreme Court, in my opinion. And every other left-wing civil libertarian lawyer in America who every day goes about his business of destroying the Christian mores, the Judeo-Christian mores of this country with glee. What fun they're having, the boys from NYU. The bright boys from Columbia and NYU and Harvard Law and Bolt Law School, all of the lowest places on earth where they teach you how to defeat the other man without firing a shot, without cutting his throat. You can actually cut his throat. The lawyer learns to commit jihad without firing a shot. And he learns it at NYU, Columbia Law, Harvard Law. How to commit jihad without firing a shot. How to decapitate the enemy without picking up a rusty knife. Who was it who said that give him a fountain pen instead of a gun and he can steal more money? Well, those were the old days. Just give him a judge that he owns. Not all judges, of course, can be owned. Some of them are very reputable and great men. In fact, they're greater today, the honest ones, than they ever were, given the climate of the times and the lack of money that they actually, the poor amount of money that they make. My hat's off to the honest judges. And I've met a few in my life. They are the true heroes. They're like the social workers of the legal profession, the far and few between.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
Listening to the Savage Nation, we present
Zechariah talks about what could be considered nuclear war, and it shall come to pass in that day that there shall not be light but heavy clouds and thick. You hear this? And there shall be one day which shall be known as the Lord's, not day and not night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time there shall be light, and it shall come to pass in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem. Half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. It's frightening. I mean, it really makes your hair stand up because it's pretty ugly what's coming. He says, I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. If this doesn't sound like what's going on right now, it seems to me all the nations of the world are lined up against Jerusalem right now. It seems all the nations are lined up against Jerusalem, except the nation of Christianity here in America. And the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity. But the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations. And when he fighteth in the day of battle, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives. Shall I stop this right now? Read it for yourself. It's in Zechariah 14. So he actually, in this, Zechariah predicts that Israel shall be attacked, the city shall be razed, half the city shall be taken into captivity, and at that point, God steps in. And at that point, you'll have to see how this story comes out. It says that, because it goes like this, and it shall come to pass in that day that there shall not be light, but heavy clouds and thick. So the Israelis then go nuclear, and they incinerate Iran, they incinerate Syria, they incinerate their enemies. And it shall come to pass in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall the Lord be one and his name one. All the land shall be turned. I don't want to read anymore because many of you don't believe in this. And I don't know whether to believe in it. And this shall be the plague where the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. You're listening to this one? If this is not a description of nuclear destruction of the Iranian people and the Syrian people, I'd like to know a better clinical description than what I'm going to read to you. I'll read it to you. It is a description of the after effects of a nuclear holocaust upon Iran and upon Syria. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet. And their eyes shall consume away in their sockets. And their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one in the hand of his neighbor. And his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. So it's terrible. It's terrible, but that is what the psychopath from Iran wants. The psychopath from Iran is trying to annihilate the Jewish people. He stands up with that dirty smirk on his face every day and says, the death of Israel is near. The Jews shall be driven into the sea. We shall destroy it. This is every day. And those pimps at the UN, those whoremongering pimps at the UN say nothing. Those dirty, useless pimps in the UN, I have nothing but utter gutted contempt for all of them. They're worthless, all of them. They say nothing. Instead, they attack America. They attack Israel. The UN. I spit on them. Worthless. But God will take care of them in the end, I can guarantee you. But what I've read to you before I got emotionally wrapped up in this is a perfect clinical description of what happens to people with the effects of a nuclear bomb. Now, it's interesting that I'm talking about this right now because I once interviewed on this show 10 years ago the man who created the neutron bomb. And it was an astounding interview. I have the tapes somewhere. I have to get them for you for next week. But he wrote an autobiography called Shame. His name is Cohen, I remember now. Mr. Cohen developed the neutron bomb. By the way, we have no neutron bombs. George Bush Sr. Disassembled all of them in an attempt to make the world safer. Did you know that? I don't know if you know this. It's shocking to it's heartbreaking to tell you this, but hey, what the heck, I'm that kind of guy. We once had neutron bombs. George Bush I dissembled all of our neutron bombs in an attempt to make peace. He went along the liberal road. Now, our enemies now have neutron bombs. We don't, so far as I last checked. But Mr. Cohen writes in his autobiography, Shame, about a lot of symptoms of a nuclear explosion. And you're not going to believe what I tell you, and it's going to take me a little time to get into this. I didn't plan on this right now. I'm going to have to go get the book, which I have a few steps from here in my vast, savage library. I have the biography. I'm looking right at it here, but it's at the back of the office, the studio. He describes why he thinks, psychologically, why he became a scientist and why he developed a bomb that would do this to people. The symptoms that I just described to you, the melting away, in essence, of a person's flesh. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. To me, out of Zechariah, I'm reading to you a prophetic vision of what's coming to the enemies of Israel. It ends with Jerusalem shall dwell safely. The enemy shall be exterminated. But this is after half the Jews are killed and taken into captivity. In other words, you want to talk about a nightmare scenario. You know, who's the winner here? Well, it would be much better if the UN sent out a strike force to take out the psychopath of Iran before he leads the world to a nuclear holocaust. That is what any sane individual would understand needs to be done. These madmen must be stopped. But instead, we have psychopaths in America. We have idiots on the Democrat side who say we are provoking Iran, that they're peace-loving people, that they mean no harm. They are the most dangerous people on the planet. These potheads, these sexual deviants that the media continues to hold up as role models, these know-nothings, these psychopaths, get up and scream they hate George Bush. They hate the military. We're the warmonger. They have everything upside down. They may as well be looking through a diseased mind, because they are looking through a diseased mind. As William Blake the poet wrote in the 19th century, the mind that alters, alters all. They have altered everything. They now take the nation, their fatherland or their motherland called America, which has given them so much, and they spit on it and they hate it. And they turn us into the monster, and they turn the true enemy of civilization, of life, into an oppressed minority. If that's not an example of an insane mind, I'd like to know what is. And yet, if you turn on Larry King, you know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000, or you can send checks to the trust account of Daniel Horowitz. He's my attorney. P.O. Box 1547, Lafayette, California, 94549. Daniel Horowitz, attorney, P.O. Box 1547, Lafayette, California, 94549. Say it's for Michael Savage. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Go to www.michaelsavage.com, and God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
To an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
To me, religion teaches peace and getting along with your fellow man, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I have never encountered in my life a religion that teaches to hate other religions and to kill people who don't follow that religion. And by definition, one day we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that such a definition may not include this religion as practiced by too many adherents in this country and in other Western countries. It cannot stand. We will not survive if we permit people to believe that their religion is the only religion, and other religions must be annihilated, and people who practice those other religions must be converted or killed. It's incompatible with our existence. And by definition, those are not religious teachings. They are political, homicidal teachings. And one day, we're going to have a leadership with the guts to outlaw such teachings. As sure as I'm sitting here, it's coming. It has to come, or this country will disappear. I have studied the story of the great days of the Arabs. And it is one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the whole history of the human race. They smashed the Byzantine army at the Battle of Yarmouk, a tributary of the Jordan River. in 634. And I'm not going to go through the entire list of countries that they conquered. But you must understand that the Arabs conquered Persians and converted the Persians to Islam. You may not know that, but the Persians were not always Islamic. They conquered Syria. They conquered Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and converted them to Islam, or large elements of the population went over to Islam. And then the Persians went over to Egypt, I believe, and they had a great host with a great force of elephants, and they won. They conquered Persia, as I said. The Muslim Empire kept pushing into western Turkestan and pushing eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell to the Muslims almost without resistance to the new conquerors, who were driven by a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of the Quran. They were ignoramuses. They read nothing. They hated the written word in any other form. And they wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library that they found in Egypt. They burnt it to the ground. They then poured along the north coast of Africa, and they entered the Straits of Gibraltar and Spain. The Muslim invaders invaded Spain in 710. They crossed the Pyrenees Mountains in 720. In 732, the Arab advance had reached the center of France. They threatened to take over all of France. But finally, the Arab advance was stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and thrust back as far as the Pyrenees again. It was only through fighting that the French retained their civilization whatsoever. Now, I don't have the time to go into these early years of the Arabs and the conquest in these 25 years, but you should know that in 25 years, the Muslim Empire expanded greatly across Persia, Persia at that time, Iran today, Arabia, Egypt, and, as I said, almost conquered a good portion of Europe itself. But they didn't kill everybody. This is the interesting part. The maniacs today, the little men with beards today, are actually worse than the early Arab conquerors. These throwbacks that we're seeing today in Hezbollah, for example, are not representative of the Arab today. They're not even representative of the Arab of 1,000 years ago. Because when the Arab conquered these other countries, they didn't kill everybody. We can talk about some of the murders if you want. But we should talk about the effect upon the human mind and the general destinies in those nations. The Arab intelligence, never forget, was a great intelligence. And the Arab intelligence that entered these other countries was flung across the world even more swiftly and dramatically than the Greeks had entered 1,000 years before. They stimulated the intellect of the whole world west of China. They broke up old ideas and developed new ones, and it was an enormous advancement for mankind. In fact, when the Muslim Arab mind entered Spain, it discovered an active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion, and it integrated, it pollinated, and they worked together. In Central Asia, the Arab mind met Buddhism and the material achievements of Chinese civilization. The Arabs learned the manufacture of paper, which made printed books possible. Who? From? From the Chinese. And finally, the Arabs came into contact with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And what happened as a result of these interactions was the intolerant self-sufficiency of the early days of faith, which made the Quran seem the only possible book, was dropped. And suddenly, a renaissance occurred. Learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. And so by the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the entire Arabized world. And I'm going to pause right there. What we have here are people who are actually pre-8th century, some of them calling this show. Here they are living in the United States of America, the most advanced civilization in the world has ever known. Instead of pollinating and integrating with this world, they continue to disseminate the hatred of the 7th century. Because by the 8th century, the Arab conquerors had created educational organizations, and learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of these Arab conquerors. But here in America, we have throwbacks teaching the most ignorant, the most homicidal people in this country that the 7th century is the century to live in, and people who do not practice their religion are less than human, and they must either be converted or you know what else. And so we have a real problem on our hands. But again, I want to remind you that by the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were writing and corresponding with learned men in Cairo, Baghdad, Bukhara, and Samarkand. The Jewish mind and the Arab mind assimilated very well together, and for a time, the two Semitic races worked very beautifully together through the language of Arabic. They didn't kill each other. The Arabs didn't kill the Jews. And I'm talking the 9th century. In the 9th century, these throwbacks in the Palestinian world and the Hezbollah are actually a throwback beyond the 9th century, whether you know it or not. And long after the political breakup and the weakening of the Arabs, the intellectual community of the Arab-speaking world actually endured. Unfortunately, it's died by today, but it was still producing considerable results in the 13th century. But we have people in the Arab world today who are living before the 13th century, as I told you. All you have to do is study some of the history. All you have to do is look at the Museum of Alexandria that they burned to the ground in the 7th century. All you've got to do is look at the wonderful things that the Arab mind gave the world. The clumsy Roman numerals, as you know, were thrown out by the Arabic figures that we use to this day. Many of the ignoramuses who call the show, who say that they're experts in the Quran, don't even know that the Arabic numbers that they're using replaced the Roman numerals. They don't even know who Rome was or what the Roman numerals were. The Arabs gave us the zero sign. The very name algebra is Arabic. So is the word chemistry. The names of such stars as Algol, Aldebaran, and Boots preserve the traces of Arab conquests of astronomy in the sky. And so they reanimated the medieval philosophy of France and Italy and the whole Christian world. So the Arabs were a great contribution to world civilization. And you must understand that they also gave us very great advances, although there was barbarism amongst them. They gave us great advances in metallurgy and technology, alloys, dyes, distilling, tinctures and essences, optical glass, were all discovered by Arab scientists. Of course, they were looking for the elixir vitae, a stimulant that would keep people living forever and prolong life indefinitely. But that's okay. That's what drove them. It drives many of us today. I understand that. The bottom line of what I'm telling you is that the Arab mind, the Muslim mind, had integrated with the world, even the worlds that it had conquered, and was getting along with them by the 8th and 9th century. And yet, we have people who have called this show who are reflecting the mind of the 7th century Muslim. The ignorance is astounding to me, but when you reflect upon the collapse of the American educational system, the dissemination of lies by the vermin in the media who have made everything morally equivalent, I am not surprised that we have fallen back to the 7th century, or that so many members of our society are still living in the 7th century.
Savage.
Arash, you've been waiting. You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Hi. Here's the basic point I want to make. Islam itself, the religion, the so-called mainstream religion, is about groups, believers or non-believers. It is not about the dignity of man as an individual. So when you have people by the hundreds of millions, you know, billions, who believe in, who do not believe in the dignity of man or individualism, then naturally they will not recognize individual rights, which is democracy. So if we want to bring democracy there, we have to do a whole lot of banging before that can be set into their thick head.
I'm not so worried about bringing democracy to them. I'm concerned about them bringing a theocracy to us. Communism didn't believe in individuality either or in individual rights, and Islam and communism has been compared by many intellectuals who have dissected the two isms. Islam is fundamentally a religion that is very much like communism and adherence to the same principle of communism in many, many ways. And people have compared it. And if the leadership doesn't understand that or is too cowardly to say it because they understand they may lose several votes, then we the people are stuck, aren't we?
Yes, we are, sir. You're absolutely right. Now, here's the problem. I'm actually from originally from Afghanistan, sir, but I've grown up in the United States, so I'm an American. My values are all American. That's how I know I'm an American. I do believe in individualism. And as an individual, here's my point. We should specify who the enemy is exactly. Islamism or fundamentalism, they're too vague. They're too academic. If we can identify the enemy as Wahhabism, coming out of Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabi Gulf area, Dubai, Qatar, all of these filthy, low-life individuals or, you know, groups or families who are making a lot of money and keeping the rest of the Muslim world ignorant, extremely ignorant, sir. That's the problem. The reason we can't...
You're 100% correct. You're a very educated man. You are a great hope for America. Unfortunately, your voice is falling on dead ears at the White House because the oil lobby is deeply embedded and enmeshed with the Wahhabi Saudi royal family, as you well understand, Arash. That is our problem right there.
So as long as we have Americans who are sellouts, you know, Benedict Arnold's taking, you know, petrodollars, I don't see how folks like me, I don't have any money for political activism purposes because no one that does funding will fund what I'm saying, and I'm trying to...
I hear what you're saying. You mean to get your message out. Well, you're getting your message out now. You just had a phenomenal billboard of ideas go across a certain amount of hundreds of thousands of people who listen on an intermittent basis, you know, adding up to a couple of million people a day and, you know, 10 million or so a week. So your position has also been written about, by the way, by intellectuals who have studied Islam. This is well known that it's Wahhabism. This is not a new idea, Arash. The problem is it's hitting a stone wall when it gets to the upper levels of the Bush-Cheney team, but it's no better on the other side. They're all about the same. Do you really think that the Democrat Party is any different?
No, just as worse. Can I tell you the story of one specific Democrat? His name is Jim Moran of Virginia, Democrat. Let me tell you what happened in my neighborhood, sir. The Wahhabis put up a center, not a mosque now, a center there. The good folks of the neighborhood protested. They said, we don't want this here. They were wise enough to know that it would be turned into a terrorist training center. They said, no, we don't want it here. Congressman Jim Moran forced it upon them. He shoved it down their throats and mine. And because of him, the Wahhabi Center in Annandale, Virginia, is now operating full of anti-American hatred. They recently, because of the outrage of a few Muslims, they've had to force two imams to step down, two Saudi-trained imams, because they were putting out too much anti-American garbage. But so what? They'll just get another and another and another. The point is, why can't we close it down?
Well, there are two answers to the question. One is it may have been a pointedly wise thing to leave it open, sort of as a honey trap for flies. You know, maybe the FBI wanted it open to attract the would-be suicide bombers. You know what I'm saying, Arash?
Yes, but in my neighborhood, sir?
So you're saying you're a mainstream, moderate practitioner of the religion of Islam, correct?
No, sir. I don't practice. I don't believe in religion.
Okay, you just don't want it in your neighborhood because you say it's too extreme and it teaches hatred and murder.
Not only that, but it's dangerous. What if these nutcases hurt me accidentally on their way to hurting someone who's whiter, you know?
You mean if they're wiring up some kind of device and it goes off?
Right, or devices, many, you know, and forget devices. These people are dangerous with their bare hands, believe it or not.
Oh, believe me, I'm very well versed in the warrior skills of the Bedouin. Trust me. I know who the enemy is. I don't think the average American understands how phenomenal they are as fighters. But having said all of that, Arash, the fact of the matter is our leadership is I think, quite ignorant of the real problem. Or worse, they are compromised.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I was lying in bed this morning trying to think about the show with all the stories I picked up over the weekend, and there was a nice fog came in over the bay over the weekend. Let me explain this to you. I live about a mile or so back off the bay in one of the places I stay in. So I had the doors open at dawn, and a cool fog came, you know, the fog came blowing in up off the bay. And it was so amazingly beautiful to lie in bed and feel the cool fog on my body. And then I started to think again. I said, we've got our society spends an inordinate amount of money because we know human life is precious. Every human life is precious. And then you have these psychos, the Islamo-fascists. All they do is think day and night how to kill, how to maim, how to humiliate. It's amazing to me that a human being could, that to me, if it's not mental illness, is at least the definition of evil. They are pure evil. There is no other definition for evil other than the Islamo-fascist in terms of psychopathic behavior towards the family of man. They have no legitimate grievances whatsoever. None whatsoever. None. Every nation on earth has self-interest. Every nation on earth has good and bad in its past. These people have only bad on their mind. They only want to kill and hurt. And the terrible, terrible loss to humanity is that the Semitic mind behind all of these evils in the Islamo-fascist universe is a brilliant mind. Make no mistake about it. Many of these men, had they gone into medicine or science or even business, architecture, building things, could be giving the world so much in terms of constructive behavior. Instead, their minds are so warped by their misinterpretation of their religion or their warped interpretation of Islam that all they do is think about how to blow up buildings, not how to build buildings, how to cut throats, not how to heal cut throats, how to kill, not how to give birth. It's astounding to me. And then I turn on a channel over the weekend late at night, and I see the Science Channel. I see missions to Mars. I see advanced people working in the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at Pasadena at the California Institute of Technology. I can't believe that they're in the same planet as the Islamofascists. The scientists who are laboring day and night to send rockets to land on a comet 10 years later. Can you imagine this, that the human mind is capable of this, that 1,000 minds, men and women, scientists, will spend their every waking hour trying to perfect the trajectory and the landing and the elliptical orbit to make it exactly perfect so that it can probe and land on a foreign object and we can learn more about not only the universe but our origins. I said, this at the same time that we have these primitive throwbacks to the 7th century who are plunging mankind into some abyss that he may not ever come out of? How much do you want out of life is the question I ask myself every day. Now, look, I'm a dreamer. I'm an idealist. I have been all of my life. It's gotten me to do some wonderful things, and it's gotten me in a lot of trouble. That's the absolute reality. I have a practical side, but I also have a very big naive side and dreaming side, which makes me so wonderful and so creative. That's the absolute truth. And it is also why I'm very good in radio, because this is not so much a talk forum as it is an art forum. Many people don't understand that. I mean, you could read articles all day long, and you could bang people over the head with illegal immigrants, and, you know, they're going to turn it off after a while. They've heard it all over and over and over again. I've been doing it for too long. We created a big momentum. The people have finally awakened to the problems. On the other hand, you know, the illegals are also human beings, and most of them, frankly, are good human beings and hardworking. Let's be clear about that. It's not as clear-cut as either side wants to make it. And I could summarize that whole thing really rather quickly, which is I would split the difference on that as an illegal alien problem if we deported all of the criminal illegal aliens in prison to start with. One-way tickets back to where they came from with a distinct monitoring device. Number two, secure the borders. Absolutely militarize our borders. Deport the criminal illegal aliens and cut off all public benefits whatsoever. That's number three, for any immigrant for 5 years, all of them. Number four, absolutely eliminate the constitutional amendment which gives automatic citizenship to anyone born here. Then I would say legitimize those who are here with those caveats. That's the way to go forward. But to just sit here and say deport everyone and the other one says give amnesty to everyone, it's stupid. Neither of those ideas are going to work. I have the solution because I've been on this problem longer than all the politicians put together, and I've been on the problem longer than the others, and I understand what needs to be done. The ultimate thing here is not to lose your humanity.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.